you can write a song with all of your emotions, all of your thoughts, all of your deepest, darkest demons. And as soon as you play it, all of a sudden, everybody relates it to themselves and not to you.
Yeah.
They're like, it's a way to express everything you feel. It's a diary that you're making public, that the name at the top of the diary suddenly no longer matters.
This is Successfully Unsigned. I'm one of your co-hosts, Dale Schack, joined tonight by David Overstreet, as our third co-host, Patty G, is out of town on a tour. So while he's gone, what should we talk about? Well, tonight, David and I take a relaxed approach and actually go sit out on the front porch on this beautiful October evening and just really kind of get personal about the two of us. We talk about our own music and how it's influenced our lives, how it's shaped us as people, how it's changed our perspectives, and how our perspectives have shifted over time with our songwriting, with our performances, and how it helps us to relate our feelings, our thoughts, and our stories to the greater world. We really hope you enjoy this episode where you get to see an inside look into David and I's personal life perspectives and some of our background and what brought us into the music industry in the first place. On a side note for all of you artists out there, tonight we are using Rode microphones. These are the little Rode Wireless Pros that you can find relatively inexpensively online that you can pick up for a variety of uses, such as vlogging, voice overdubs, and other remote dialogue recording. This is a great demo of what you can make them sound like in a real-world application. And so, of course, as you're listening to this, with it being both a different style microphone and us being outside on the porch, you're going to hear more environmental sounds, like airplanes going overhead, cars passing by, maybe even some crickets or other bugs in the background. However, if you want to know more about my mixing process to help remove some of these distractions from the audio recording, feel free to find us online at successfully_unsigned and ask me there. You can also find us at Unsigned Podcast on TikTok or on our website, su-podcast.com. As always, we'd appreciate if you would hit that like, subscribe, rate us on your favorite streaming platform, and share this video with your friends. If you're on YouTube, don't forget to engage notifications so that you know the next time we post a video.
What is up, guys? We are back with another edition of Successfully Unsigned, and we are not in anybody's studio tonight. We are actually outside because it's fall.
It's beautiful.
And I'm excited because, you know, I was walking the dog today and I saw all the leaves falling. I was like, this is incredible. It's crew neck weather. You know, this is what I was put on this earth for.
You and your crew next, man.
Yeah. And I've been gone for a couple of episodes. I hope you guys missed me. And I hope you listened to the episodes that were so brilliantly filmed and recorded by Mr. Dale Schack here. Quentin was on.
Quentin.
Talking about touring.
Yeah.
Quentin Kufall. Please go follow him. He's a very interesting human being. If you have not interacted with the social media, you should do so.
He's actually back on tour again. That was what the whole episode was about, was actually talking about tours, kind of tips for first time tourers. Is that a thing?
Real quick, I gotta handle this.
Yeah.
So say the word poor.
Poor.
Now say tour.
Tour.
No, you said it different. You just say a tour.
Tour? Yeah, it's tour. Tour.
This man, every time he said tour, he like puts like an extra syllable in it.
Tour. It's two syllables.
I mean, it is, but it's interesting. It's funny because you say poor.
Poor.
Yeah.
Tour.
Nah, you added it. Well, we're hopefully going to try and say all of our words right tonight.
Was right.
Yeah, it was right.
Was right.
All right.
How do you say it?
What do you guys think? Put it in the comments. follow us. Subscribe. All those things on social media. TikTok. We are Successfully Unsigned. Under pretty much every
social media platform.
Social media platform.
Except for TikTok, which is Unsigned Podcast.
Unsigned Podcast.
Sure you check us there.
Yes.
And can you say the website name?
su-podcast.com. Right. See, right. I've grown. Right. I've grown in that way. That's what I did while I was away. I just practiced saying that several times in a row.
Remember like when you were a kid and you'd do like phonics and like phonetics and like school? You'd have to like early
school?
Spelling like stuff.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. I don't know. I
they didn't have su-podcast.com and like your.
They didn't. That's a huge problem.
What kind of school did you go to, man?
Andrew Jackson Elementary. It was cute. We had Eagle Run. You don't know what that is, but it's you just run around and someone puts marks on your chest and it's like it's like the circle where your parents pick you up at the end of the day, but you just run around it.
Did you go, ka?
Honestly, yes.
You should. If you
that
don't,
song, I believe I can fly. Dude,
had every kid in like a chokehold.
We had like a graduation ceremony on fourth grade, and it was more emotional than my high school graduation. Not joking.
I believe that.
I believe I Can Fly was playing, and it was an emotional moment. But all that aside, we are here tonight, just me and Dale. Patrick is away.
He's also on tour.
He's also on tour. Congrats, Patrick. I really wanted to text him and be like, could you do like a video every day of like a vlog style for this tour? Because I'm really curious as to how this tour is going for Mr. Patty G. But
and if you want to hear about that, I'm sure when he gets back, we are going to be talking about that.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
His experience on his first tour.
100%. Some of the questions he was asking Quinn was like...
Yeah. He's Quinn was like... I didn't think about that. He was didn't think about that.
But I've been planning my outfits. And Quinn's like, what? You just need underwear, socks, and a couple shirts. And he's like, but my outfits every day.
Yeah.
They're very important to Patrick. But we are holding it down tonight. And I thought tonight we'd just have a chill episode. And we just kind of talk about me and Dale. Because you guys really... We haven't... Other than our intro episode, we haven't really done like an episode just about us and just talking about us. I mean, you kind of know about us from previous episodes, and we'll mention stuff from our personal life in various interviews, but we don't really talk about us and just have like real conversations between us hosts. And so, you know, figured it'd be a nice opportunity. I have this handy dandy cup here, and in this cup, our questions about songwriting, because Dale and I are fellow songwriters. And we're just going to start a dialogue through these questions. If you, I'm sure you'll relate to some of these questions. But yeah, I think it's a good opportunity to just kind of talk about some things with songwriting and explore some new ideas and maybe provoke some for you. So Dale.
Oh, do I get the honor without further ado, draw?
Take the first draw, my friend.
I feel like I should, like, you know, those tumblers where they tumble up all the questions or all the things, even though these are not moving at all.
They're not. Literally, but they're just, like, stuck in there.
They're stuffed in there.
They're, like, perfectly folded, but it's fine.
I'm going to pretend like I know what all of these
like,
are.
Like, close your eyes
know.
And pretend like you're just, you can't see them.
Even though I've not read a single one of these.
Yeah.
All right.
Question number one.
Is there a particular feeling you want to convey in your writing?
That's a good one.
Mr. Overheat?
I guess I'll take the first stab at it. I dropped my...
Is there a particular feeling you want to convey in your writing?
Yeah, I think, first of all, it's important to know the answer to this question. As an artist, just what vibe do you want your songs to kind of convey? I remember Tristan, when he asked for my first mix to mix for me, or master for me rather, he was like, what do you want this to sound like? And I just wasn't prepared for that question at all. I should have been, but I just wasn't.
Talking about this latest song?
No.
It was the very first one.
It was actually the first one I had professionally mastered, which was Running It Back, Go Stream It. But he asked me that and I was like, I don't know. But I'll get back to you. And I gave him this one album by Maroon 5 that I really liked, Songs About Jane, which was their first album, I believe, in 04. And so that song was a little bit different for me just because it was more of like a rock, pop sort of, not even ballad, but it kind of felt like it moved like a ballad to me. But it definitely wasn't. It was faster. All that being said, it's important to have an answer to that question and just sort of a general sense of like what the feeling of your music should convey. For me, I think it's like, it's very emotional. Like, I really want you, it's like a deep thought sort of emotional mindset. Like, you ever wake up in the middle of the night and just start thinking about something like really deeply?
Of course.
And then the next morning, you're like, that was so serious. Like, why did I think about, you know, this interaction in such heavy detail?
Yeah.
That is kind of what I'm going for. Okay. Just that feeling of, like, taking a subject material and just kind of not overanalyzing it, but, like, this latest song I'm about to release, like, it's very, like, overanalysis of, like, both sides of an argument. Almost to the point where it's like, we get it, you know? So for me, it's more chill. As far as the music, it's always been sort of like a jazzy, bluesy, chill vibe mixed with sort of a poppy element.
Yeah.
So, yeah. What about you?
Well, since you wrote the question, I want to, I guess, clarification. Do you, is it more song to song, or is it like you, me as an artist, and general scope?
Kind of thing? It's a general scope.
General scope, I think. Because that question can apply song to song.
It can, for sure.
You know, as you're writing, running it back versus times like these, you know, those are going to be two very different, like...
Very different, yeah.
Very different...
For sure. Feelings and...
Feelings that you're trying to convey in the song.
Yeah.
But as an artist, the three main, I think, emotions and concepts that I want to push out in my music are kind of a sense of peace, like contentment.
Yeah. I get that from your songs, for sure.
Peace,
do you feel like you have negative vibes in your music?
Negative vibes? Sometimes.
Yeah?
Absolutely.
Really?
Oh, absolutely. Now, well, negative vibes in what way?
Like, when people listen to your songs, do you feel like they get angry or sad? They feel that way? Not, or excited?
I wouldn't say angry. Yeah. I don't think any of my music is angry music.
Right.
You know, I'm not an angry person.
Right.
Right? So I don't... It's not the thing that I'm trying to convey or promote, because that's not the thing that I feel.
Mm-hmm.
Sad? Sure, sometimes. Okay. Some of my music is more sad boy hour kind of thing.
Yeah.
Right. But I want people to have a sense of like peace, contemplation.
Yeah.
You know, a sense of like that introspective kind of contemplation, maybe not on the analysis side of things, but more of like the, my life is like this, or is my life like this? So peace, contemplation, and nostalgia.
Nostalgia is a good one.
Those are the three things that I think of immediately as like, that's what I want my music to sound like. That's what I want more, not even just sound like, but feel like.
Yeah.
Like if you're sitting down, like, okay, here recently, I was in studio recording a new song of mine that, first song I've recorded of my own, like with the intent to release here in a couple years.
Congrats.
I'm excited for it.
Yeah.
Really like this song. And I wanted it to be piano fronted. I can't play piano that well.
Yeah.
I wrote some of it on piano, and I can kind of plunk around some chords, but I knew that for this song, I needed somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
So I brought a pianist into studio, and he did a phenomenal job on this song. But as we were sitting there, I told him, I gave him my reference songs. I'm like, this is what I want it to sound like, kind of in the arrangement field and the dynamic field. It's a super, like, dynamic song.
Yeah.
In the sense of, like, loud, soft, very... leaning heavy on like the orchestral jazz kind of field.
Right.
But I told him, I said, I want this song to feel like, I want this piano part to feel like if you were to go downstairs into like a basement. I've never had a house with a basement, but this is what I picture. Mm. You go downstairs into a basement, you find an old piano covered in like canvas, right? It's got a drop cloth over it for like storage.
Mm-hmm.
And you peel that thing back and the dust is flying everywhere. And it's an upright piano, right? Shoved against like a brick wall somewhere or a concrete wall. You peel that canvas back, all the dust is flying, and you sit down and you start playing. I want this song to feel like you're playing that song for no one but yourself and the whole world, but there's such weight and nostalgia and memory baked into that piano,
mm-hmm.
baked into the concept of the song that the lyrical story is telling. I want it to feel like you're playing in front of a crowd of millions, but it's all you.
Yeah.
It's just you. And so I told myself, I don't want all the timing perfect. I want there to be little grace notes that are out of time. I want you to push and pull the beat.
Yeah.
I want this thing to feel like you're playing to no one but yourself. So you hear the action of the piano.
Mm-hmm.
You hear the hammer strike. You hear all those kind of things. Because I wanted that song to feel like nostalgia and contemplation.
Okay. I like that. Just the imagery of the old piano and, you know.
Yeah.
That the age of an instrument can really enhance your sound. Like, that's why a lot of people like using vintage instruments and like old, like worn Johnny Cash, like style guitars. Cause it just adds,
It
adds a kind of a ruggedy element to it.
I think of Willie Nelson with that big old hole in his from that pick, you know?
Yeah. So, man, I definitely get that. I mean, I think Tiger Hill was very like it felt like an exciting type of song mm-hmm. that had like a building sort of element
sure,
to it. Yeah. And then you have your other ones like Can't Let Go? Is that
what close enough.
What is it called?
Don't ask me that. I don't remember. Yeah. Have to Let Go is
have
the one
to
you're
let go. Yeah. I only played on it, and you know.
That's okay. I only listened to it and forgot it.
But that one's more of kind of a ballady sort of.
It is.
You know,
kind of a bluesy jazz.
Yeah, bluesy ballad, jazz. Like, so
yeah,
it definitely vibey, and it definitely puts you in a specific place, which I like.
Well, I'll tell you, since we're hanging out outside tonight, mm-hmm. and we'd originally talked about having a fire.
Yeah.
That song was one I wrote in probably about 10 minutes sitting around a fire.
Really?
After hearing a friend of mine tell her story about like her breakup with her then, well, and still now ex.
Yeah.
And she had kind of just told the story of what was going on. And I was sitting there, I was just plunking around chords and stuff, just not really playing anything meaningful.
Yeah.
And I heard that, I'm like, man, what would it be like if I were in her shoes? Pretend mm-hmm. if I could pretend to be her for a few minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And now the song really has nothing to do with their relationship and their situation, but I used their situation as the inspiration for the feeling. Like, what would I feel if I was in her shoes? How would I feel if I were to say, you know, kind of these concepts?
And right.
That's how that song was born.
Right. That's awesome. I think, you know, it's. There's something about sitting around a fire or just like anything about nature, like rain mm-hmm. or just mm-hmm. early in the morning, a certain time of day, writing is always better for me.
Yeah, absolutely.
Especially if it's 1 or 2 in the morning, I feel like that's...
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
For some reason, that's just prime writing time.
Yeah. And also, guys, as a side note, tonight, while we're sitting outside, we also have the wonderful Nashville Airport flying overhead.
Yes.
But we're also... If you're watching, or especially if you're listening, doing something a little different with our microphones as well.
Mm-hmm.
Want to shout that out there. We're using Rode Wireless Pro. Is that the mm-hmm. correct yeah. model there? And kind of showcasing, and I meant to bring this up earlier when we first started the episode.
Yeah.
If you're an artist and you're doing a lot of film content with like your phone, and you're doing like maybe voiceovers or for TikTok or interviews,
yeah.
or even if you're just like doing a bunch of like selfie style videos for your social media,
vlogs,
and you want vlogs especially, and if you want something that's better than just your phone camera, mm-hmm. this is one option, and we're kind of demoing it tonight for y'all. This is the second interview that we've used one of them all the way through for, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you want to hear the first interview, it was the
Swift Artist interview. Swift Artist. Natalie was on that interview. She wasn't on camera, but she was on microphone. She was wearing one of these. So, if you want to hear some of the quality on it, mm-hmm. definitely go back and listen to that one or
listen to this one.
Yeah.
And so this is a little bit of a demo for that. We are not sponsored by Rode. Rode, if you want to sponsor us, let us know.
Please
love it.
Yeah.
We actually use quite a bit of Rode equipment between... Mm-hmm.
That's our main console we
between
use.
Between these, so. The console, some of the mics I use for the live sessions.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, a lot of the mics I use for the live sessions.
Yeah.
We use a lot of Rode equipment.
They make good stuff.
They make good stuff. And
quality.
It's usually affordable for small artists.
Right.
So they're definitely a brand you should check out if you don't already.
But. Nice. All right. Here I go.
Question two.
Here we go. Mm-mm. What obstacles do you face with your writing?
Ooh, with my writing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I almost touched on this in the last question, but I'm glad I didn't because I think it's more applicable here.
Mm-hmm.
And that is stress.
How so?
It's so hard to write when you're stressed out, when you have a million things going on around you, and all of us do. It's hard to really be in the full creative swing of things when you're worrying about, you know, your house, your car, your girl, your whatever, right? All your friends, all your stuff here, and your money, and all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You have all of these pressures around you. It's hard to have a clear enough mind to write.
Yeah.
And so for me, like when I am go, and stressed to the max, even if I have a little bit of time, even if I come home early at night and I want to play music and I want to write and I sit down with a guitar and start strumming out, it doesn't happen. or it doesn't sound good. It's just so blah, and you can tell that it feels so forced.
Yeah.
But, and you can't control all the stresses in your life. You can't do that. You can control some things, but you can't control everything.
Mm-hmm.
But if you can find the time to slow your life back a little bit, like, this is something that the music industry does really well, which is make you go and go and go and go and go and go, you know, 0 to 60 in you know, 0.3 yeah. seconds, and continue staying at 60 until your tank is empty. Music industry is really good at sucking you in on that. But if you can step back and slow your life down a little bit and find more consistent time to go take a walk, to read a book, to consume other artwork, to just kind of enjoy life, for me, I find that that opens up my creativity a little bit more, and I can write again.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, oh, wow, I feel more inspired to actually write something.
Yeah.
And I don't feel like I'm forcing myself to write something, and it turns out usually better.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of truth to that. I mean, having that clear mind is something that is necessary for that moment in time of writing and having organizing thoughts in that way. I think that stresses also produce a lot of motivation, because it's like between the stresses, when you have that kind of self-reflection mm-hmm. about what the week was, or like, mm-hmm. Like today I had like a reflective moment about my shift and just how that could be kind of the concept for a song.
Mm. It provides inspiration. It does, for sure.
I think the anxiety of life, just, I view it as something that's actively trying to stop your writing, and that I feel like I'm an achiever in the way of like, I like to combat that. It's like, mm-hmm. no matter how stressed I am, it's like, okay, we're going to sit down and we're going to try and come up with something. Cause it's like, I want quality, but I also want quantity as well. It's weird.
You have to continue writing. Yeah.
It's like the more chances you don't have, like the more chances you don't take to write, it's like the less likely you are to have the bad song that leads to the good song.
Right.
You know, but I definitely agree. Like, I've tried to write in really stressful times in my life, including this one. And I got one good song, but other than that, it's been pretty consumed with other aspects of my life. And, mm. you know, there will be seasons of your life where you're writing more, you know? So yeah, agreed. As far as my struggle, the obstacle I face is just never finishing. Like, it's rare that I get through a song to completion of like,
Yeah.
And I'm talking about writing it all, recording it all, liking what I'm recording as I'm recording it, mixing it all, liking what I'm mixing as I'm mixing it, mastering it, and saying, okay, my baby is set for the world. That's so difficult for me, just because I put my work under the microscope so much, and every day is like a different perspective mm-hmm. of what it is or isn't. I just recently took some time away from like the song and everything, and just kind of let it hang back. And because when I left it, I was like, I don't like this. And then I came back from my trip and listened to it again. I was like, I love this. And I was like, what happened? And just like listening to it with those fresh ears
mm-hmm.
and not overthinking and being too critical about your work is... It's like, where's that balance of being too critical and then also being realistic?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So maybe being realistic is the middle ground between being too critical and being very lackadaisical. So I don't know. That would be my...
I mean, yeah, it's... I totally get that.
Yeah.
I totally get that, because like, it's so easy to start something. You're like, man, I love this. You go to sleep and you wake up the next day and you open it back up. You're like, man, I'm going to love this. And then it just falls flat. And like, you're like, what was I thinking?
With your first like album, like how many songs did that start with? I'm curious. Was that
Are you talking about my the first handful that I released?
The first handful that you released, yeah.
So,
like, was that a long process with those songs? Man. Or was it more like, I've already got the songs in place, I just need to record them and get them out?
For those three, I'd had them written for a while.
Okay.
I'd had them written for a couple years, and I knew I wanted to release... I released all... My first three songs, I released all as three singles at the same time.
Okay.
I haven't done an album or even, like, a cohesive EP yet. Although I do want to do an EP here soon. But I've, yeah, right. But, I knew what I wanted to release. I knew two of them specifically. And then I was like, I want to release Half Let Go as the third song.
Yeah.
Looking back, I'm like, wow, the production on those songs, rough.
Could have been better. Yeah.
Rough.
I mean,
but it was also right at the beginning of my career trying to record.
Right. That's okay.
And so they will disappear from streaming platforms. Yeah. They will. Yeah, very in the very near future.
Of course. It's a fun measuring stick though.
It
for
is.
Sure.
And I'm gonna keep those. Obviously. Yeah. I'm gonna keep those. And maybe someday I'll re-record them.
Yeah.
Re-release them with considerably better production quality. Mm-hmm. But because I still like the songs and I like the story behind some of the songs. But yeah, you know. I loved them at the time, and that's what mattered.
Yeah.
I loved them enough to put them out. And I got to that point, I'm like, I'm either gonna put these out now or I'm never going to.
Never
so let
going
me just
to.
let me just take the first step. I didn't have anything released at that point in time. I'm like, let me just take the first step and get something out there to the world.
Yeah.
And you know, for that sake it was worth it because it got me over that. Mm-hmm. Now it's like, yes, I want to release stuff and yeah. I can release stuff, but I'm no longer like that. Afraid because I've never done it before.
Can I ask you, like, was it received differently than you thought it was going to be received by people?
It was.
In what way? Like, better or worse?
It was received better. People were really kind of... people were very supportive.
Yeah.
Of those songs. Looking back, I'm like, wow, there's some real friends.
Yeah.
You know, because...
The memes weren't lying.
You know, they were some real friends. But yeah. Now Tiger Hill... was a lot more of an organic, like, reception, I think.
Yeah.
A lot of people, I think, more genuinely liked that song when I released it than, say, my first couple. Mm. And then, well, I had the first three, and then I did a fourth single. And that one was okay. Production was considerably better than the first three, but still had a long ways to go.
Right.
And then I did Tiger Hill and Burn Your Name.
Mm.
Tiger Hill and Burn Your Name. I love the production on.
Yeah,
I love
those. Burn Your Name is a beautiful song.
Yeah, and a friend of mine was like, "Hey, I want to hear." He's like, "I love Tiger Hill. I want to do that one, and I want to do one more. What do you got?" So I showed him those songs.
Yeah.
And so he did all the production engineering on those, and I absolutely loved it. But yeah, I mean, that's how it goes, though. You have growth, but there are going to be days where you're going to look back and like, oof.
Mm-hmm.
Oof.
Yeah.
And whether it's been released or not.
Yeah.
You know, I've gone back to like, I'm sure you have, you pull up old like DAW sessions of like,
oh, yeah.
Oh, this song, I remember the song in my head. It was like so cool.
Right.
And it's not anymore.
It's not in the same way anymore. For
it's not,
sure. It's like, it's not. It could still be cool in a certain way, but
there's still elements that you probably like.
That you remember but, being like, okay, right. This is, yeah.
Yeah.
But
with that, guys, let's take a quick break.
Quick
we'll
break.
Be back.
Hey, guys, what's up? It's DJ Patty G. I hope you guys have been enjoying the show so far. If you want to go find more, go to our website, su-podcast.com. We have lots of cool playlists there, whether it be from artists that we've had on the show or with other independent artists from all over the world. Also, make sure to follow us at successfully_unsigned on all of our platforms, as well as Unsigned Podcast on TikTok. You guys will be our best friend if you go rate us 5 stars on all platforms. And if you like and subscribe this video, make sure to keep watching so you can see more of our shenanigans and other tomfoolery. Thanks, guys.
What's up, guys? Welcome back. Dale and I are here. We are answering questions from a cup about our songwriting. Question number three. Here we go. We're going to jump right in.
Let's jump in. And hey, if y'all have questions for either of us or for artists that you know and you want us to go ask them, let us know in the comments. Let us know on Instagram, TikTok, our website. Reach out to us. We want to hear your feedback. We would love to have, we would love to cultivate this conversation outside of just this time while we're sitting here on the front porch tonight.
On the front porch. You know, it's a beautiful night.
It's beautiful, beautiful
in
night.
In October. All right. What values do you have that are reflected in your writing?
Ooh, what values? What do you mean by values?
So, like, what values is maybe a poor word. What, like, themes? What are some overall themes in your music that you find? Are most of your songs love songs, or most of your songs first person song? Like,
ooh, that's tough. Most of my songs are conversations. Most of my songs are conversations. Now, a lot of the ones I've released might not be, but most of the songs that I write are in some form or another a conversation.
Really?
Not maybe a one-sided conversation. Put it that way. It's not like...
So it's just Dale talking to himself.
Yeah. Pretty much. I'm going crazy.
Dale talking to a wall.
Right. It's I mean conversation not in the sense of like it's a duet. Like I'm a sing and you sing. And I'm a sing and you sing. Right. I have written some duets and they're fun. They're great.
Yeah.
But I mean conversation in like the sense of like a lot of what I write is like I'm going to sit down and I'm going to tell you what's going on.
Yeah.
Like from one person to another. You know, I picture like... You know, everybody has those shower thoughts and you go and you're like, man, if I would have just said this, it would have been better.
Yeah.
Like, and so a lot of what I write ends up kind of being that way. Mm-hmm. It's like it's in the perspective of one person talking to another person.
Mm-hmm.
But getting a long form answer. Yeah. You know, it's not just either that or it's one person talking to themselves.
Yeah.
Like the introspective.
It's like the retrospective of like.
Yes.
Yeah.
So a lot of, as far as like perspective, a lot of mine end up that way. Okay. Again, a lot of what I've released, I'm trying to think if any of what I've released has been that way. I don't think so.
Why is that? Why do you think you've released that? Because you view them as different?
I do. It's like... I do view them as different. And yeah. The ones I've released, I think have been, as songs are concerned, better songs, typically.
Yeah.
So maybe I can't write a good conversation song.
Well,
maybe that's the thought. Or the other thought is too, like songs are very personal. I mean, you know very well how, like, personal situations that you and I have discussed, you know, just hanging out as people that have informed your music.
Yeah.
Now, you do a very good job of describing your situations, your real-life situations, describing them in a song poetically.
Yeah.
That's not direct.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a direct, like, oh, this happened, this happened, this happened, this happened. I thought this, I thought this, I thought this, I thought this. I'm not so good at describing real life situations poetically as you are.
I disagree.
I mean, the only one that I've released that is of a real life situation is Tiger Hill. All my others are of fictitious that I've released are fictitious situations.
So I
or
think,
things of that nature.
Are you referencing like using similes and metaphors and like
similes, metaphors, whatever you want to describe it
as. What's the word for it?
Typically when I write about a real life personal situation, I struggle dissociating that from directly speaking on what happened.
Right.
Because nobody really, unless it's like super juicy, nobody really wants to sit there and hear you say exactly what happened. It's not a documentary.
Right.
It's not a nonfiction novel.
It's a piece.
It's not it's not a biography. People are there for the art.
Mm-hmm.
They're there for the music. They're there for something they can relate to.
For sure.
And so for me, when I write those songs, it's hard for me to separate lyrically.
Mm-hmm.
This is what happened. This is how I'm going to describe it. Because as a songwriter, sometimes you have to take what happened and embellish it into a story.
Yeah,
like a song can, you know, based on real events, like movies say.
Right.
You have to do that with music, and I have done that. And in fact, probably the next song I release is that way. I think it's one of the few that I've taken a real life situation, taken it based on real events, flipped the script, flipped the perspective of everything that happened, and pulled in multiple different perspectives to kind of collage this concept and story that happened, but the song is not an autobiography. It's not meant to be word for word literally what happened, although there are word for word quotes in it.
Right
That's because that's how songwriting is. That's how songwriting is. And so for me, I have a hard time like typically separating those two things, and so my songs on personal stories and personal life end up kind of being either boring or way too specific. And it's like, Nobody's going to listen to this.
I think some people appreciate that.
Maybe.
But not being, it's not boring. Your songs aren't boring, but like being, like saying what you mean.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
Some people are like, they're not as intuitive when it comes to music. And it's like, mm-hmm. what's happening here?
Sure.
Like, have you ever heard a song and like heard the lyrics and you don't really know the beauty of them until you like read them?
Yes.
Or you see them in a context of like, I don't know, someone else singing them and it's like slowed down and you're like, oh, that's what that is. Whereas saying what you mean, I feel like creates that imprint immediately in a song for some people, for most people, I would say, initially.
There is time and place to be direct.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. But there's also time to be poetic.
Yeah.
And
it's a balance.
It is a balance. I'm more of a direct person when it comes to my lyric writing, which is something that I want to grow and change, because if all of my stuff is that way, then I need to branch out and flex the muscles.
It's rhyme zone, bro.
It's rhyme zone.
Literally go to rhyme zone. Yeah. Type in a word that's like super basic and then look words similar to this word. And then you'll find like the synonyms for the word.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, that's a much better way to describe that. And then you kind of create a rhyme scheme around that. It helps.
It does.
It definitely helps. I have been using it and it's helped because I viewed myself similar to what you're saying when I was like doing my acoustic stuff earlier on. It was like, you know, because mine was very sappy love songs, like the first time I saw you didn't know. And I was like, well,
yeah,
could have said that different. But yeah, that's something I think you're maturing in already in a lot of your releases. I think Tiger Hill is, if not like, I think it gives you enough of an image in your mind. Like, that's such a powerful image when I listen to that song. And it doesn't have to be done through, you know, beautiful words and like,
Overly poetic. Colloquialisms. That is true.
Colloquialisms.
I mean, everything that was written in that song is pulled all directly from one night.
Yeah.
From one date that I went on.
Right.
Right. Everything. The dogs, the aliens, the stars, date, the whatever. Right. The date. Everything was pulled from that one date.
Yeah.
And
she's out there listening right now.
She might be. No, she's not.
She's still on Tiger Hill. She's waiting for you.
No, she's. Well, we're not getting into that. Okay. We're not getting into that. But no, it's all pulled from one date. And it is very direct. But it's kind of like the highlights of the conversation.
Yeah.
It's the highlights of the things of the night. Mm-hmm. The events of that night, I mean. So in that sense, it's very direct. But it's kind of like snippets.
Mm.
It's very kind of snippet-like based, at least in my head.
Right.
So look at
that's how we process memories.
Yeah.
It's like not every detail. It's like snippets.
Yeah, yeah. It's like the Cliff Notes.
Yeah, the Cliff Notes version.
That Tiger to the top of Tiger Hill is the Cliff Notes.
It's
the Cliff Notes of my date.
It's what you used to tell your teacher you read the book when you really didn't.
Exactly. But what about you? You didn't answer the question for yourself.
I didn't answer the question. The themes I think are more prevalent in my writing are just this idea of. I think it's changed. Like early on, it was very innocent, you know, because I didn't understand a lot about life and about love and about relationships. And so it's just a very basic sort of view of what relationship, like the very basic problems in relationships. And then it started to kind of grow more complex as I started to go through more things in my relationships. And I think now it's got this very like scorned element to it.
I can see that. Ivory Black is
Ivory Black is a little bit that way.
Yeah,
Running It Back is that way. I wrote Running It Back about a breakup.
Yeah. Yeah.
Talking about basically just like I'm running it back in my mind over and over again about what happened and just like, and so it's a very I went from this very like positive sort of poppy like.
Yeah,
lovey-dovey style that everyone loved, but like everyone loved my acoustic element of like those kinds of songs with like major sevens and like embellishments like that. Mm-hmm. People love those, but I grew out of that.
Sure.
And I wanted to try something different. And
like life's in a different place.
Life's in a different place. And I think my music really, including this newer song, it's very
like serious. It's got a very serious sort of mellow yet urgent feel to it, in my opinion.
Okay.
And by urgent, I'm mainly referencing the lyrics of the song, just like giving that, like being very direct, but also having I don't even know. It's just got this like urgent feel to it to me. And so, yeah, I think unfortunately right now there's like a very scorned element to my music theme wise. I think that will change again. I hope it will.
Yeah.
But it's also a phase I find really interesting right now.
Well, it's a phase that follows life, right? Mm-hmm. You know, any individual's artwork is going to reflect the experience and the atmosphere that they're in or have recently been in, you know? But it's something, I mean, there's art that you pull from experience from, and there's art you pull from the imagination of somebody else's experience. This is, as far as I can tell, the two basic categories that you can pull from. Either you've done it or you imagine that you're doing it or have been through it. And both have their place. I think when you write from your own personal experience, it ends up being a little more gritty.
Yeah.
Because you felt all of that. It's a little more raw.
Yeah.
You can tell. Like when I sometimes go into studio and like record artists singing their songs, you can tell the artists that mean their lyrics.
Mm.
You can tell, you know, you go to an open mic night.
Yeah.
And listen to the songs that are sung, and you can tell the artist that lived what they're singing about.
Yeah.
Like, it's a real thing that happened, and they feel every ounce of it, even though it might have happened years ago.
Mm.
Right? You can tell that in their art.
Right.
You know, versus somebody else who sings the exact same song doesn't have the emotion in it.
Right.
They don't have the soul in it. They don't have the passion in it, because that wasn't their situation.
Yeah, that kind of... Now that you say that, it reminds me a lot of... when we were in the studio, this was 3 or 4 months back, and like I was struggling to connect with a song that I wrote back in high school. Like,
yeah.
Really struggling. And it was coming out in my lyrics, it was coming out in my tone. And that was when I really wrote as more of a vibey song than it was to be like specifically about a subject matter.
Mm.
And so, it, you know, that stuff, you're right, it does come out, you know, it does show. And so, do you think that there's like a real difference? Like if you wrote a song about like imagining something, doing something, and writing a song that you've actually been through, that those two would contrast, like of your own music?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think if you took the same situation and you wrote on both sides of it, one side looking forward to and imagining what's going to happen, and on the other side reflecting what has already happened, I think you'd have two completely different tones.
Completely different.
Right? Because there's that reality that sits in between of that experience. That is just going to shift your perspective. Like, here would be an extreme example. Like, I'm never going to go to the Olympics, but I can imagine that in a fantasy world, I can sit here and say, I'm going to the Olympics next week, and I'm going to write a song about going to the Olympics.
Yeah.
You know, and write a song. And it's probably going to be filled with all kind of like butterflies, rainbows, sunshine. Like, this is going to be awesome.
Imagery.
Right? It's going to be like, wow, this is huge. This is the world. This is, wow, this is everything. And then I'll go to the Olympics and do the thing. And then the next week after, sit down and write. And there's probably still going to be some of that element of, wow, I just did that.
Yeah.
Wow, I was just at the Olympics. But then there's also going to be the realism of, hey, I don't know what happened there. Maybe I didn't place.
Yeah.
Ooh, I went and competed on the world stage, and I got, you know, 50th place out of 50. Ouch. There's reality there.
Yeah.
Or maybe you get there and you think everything's going to be this, you know, bright world served on a silver platter, and it turns out it's not.
Mm.
You know, it's served on a paper plate. What then?
Mm.
If it's served at all, maybe you got to go get it yourself.
Better hope it's a Dixie paper plate, because those are right? Durable.
They are.
Yeah,
but
very true.
You're going to have those two different perspectives. And one is going to be filled with hope and
awe, and one is going to be filled with, I wouldn't say regret and disdain, depends on how the situation turned out, but it's probably going to be filled with a little more of the seriousness, because life is very rarely kind of thing.
Yeah.
Even if something goes great, amazing, better than you could ever expect, even if you get first of first, you're still going to have that realism element to it that's like, wow, everything went perfect. I couldn't have asked for it to be better, but it's not how I imagined it.
Yeah.
Let's get one next more question. Yeah. That's the last two. I'll get this one. All right.
I did do two. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to do that.
Cut in line.
I did cut in line. I bet.
What would your hit single sound like?
My hit single would probably sound like something I don't want. Like, I'm just imagining the most commercial thing.
Yeah.
You know? That is so, like, lovey-dovey. Yeah. Like, again, it's like people would want me to be like, write a song up with G major 7 and, you know, talk about love and make your voice go super high. And it's like, what if I don't want to do that? You know, but I picture it being like that. I picture it being similar to, I'm trying to think of a song that's kind of comparable, like a Nick Jonas song or something, like very, I don't know. Like, you know that song Leave Before You Love Me by the Jonas Brothers and Marshmello?
I've heard it.
Yeah. It's kind of like that, like very just poppy, fluffy. But like, a lot of those start as like acoustic rock bangers.
Yeah.
And then they get,
yeah,
you know,
sure,
puffed up, power puffed up for commercial radio.
Okay.
But yeah, it's probably what I would say. What about you?
I mean, if we're talking hit single, you're going to have commercial like written all over it.
Of course. Depends on what station you're playing from.
Right. I think mine would end up being something very like, I don't know, maybe this is wishful thinking. I want to write.
No, it's supposed to be wishful thinking.
Supposed to be wishful thinking. Okay. I want to write like a song in the summer type thing. A very like synth based, like boom, ka, boom, ka, kind of like.
Yeah.
What's that song? Cake by the Ocean.
Like, oh, that's, you know what's funny? Nick or Joe Jonas is in that band. Cake.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah.
Is he really? Like, okay, I've heard the song a million times. One of the groups that I work with and Nick's for that does live shows does that song at every show. And I'm not going to listen to lyrics. I'm just not.
Yeah.
Because in my naivety of not knowing the lyrics, I'm quite literally imagining somebody sitting like cross-legged, like right at that breaking point of the waves, eating cake off like, you know, a tiny little plate. And I'm like,
a paper plate.
And I'm like, this, I love this.
Yeah.
I love the naive, innocent concept of somebody just like eating cake by the ocean.
Right.
And I feel like the song is probably not about that.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to go look up the lyrics
if
to prove myself
any
right.
Any food that does not belong by the ocean,
it's cake.
100%
cake. I would never eat cake by the ocean.
Because you need to be moist in the ocean.
But I love that idea.
Yeah.
I love the idea of sitting by the ocean and eating cake.
Yeah.
And I don't want that song ruined for me, so I refuse to listen to the lyrics.
Getting sand in your cake? No, this is,
But that being, and it's a piece of chocolate cake. Oh, every time.
Of course.
Every time.
Dale's hungry. Do we need to take a break and get you fed?
We might.
Probably. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to feed Dale, and we're going to come right back. Stay with us.
Thank you once again for listening to Successfully Unsigned. I would like to take a moment during this break to remind you to visit our website at su-podcast.com to view all of the newest and latest content that we put out. Also, do us a huge favor and hit like and subscribe on this YouTube video, and like and rate us on your favorite streaming platform. Each one of those things helps us out tremendously. We would love to hear your thoughts on what artists we should have on next, what content we should cover, what kind of topics we should discuss, and any tips and tricks you might have in the music industry. Thank you for being one of our favorite listeners, and enjoy the rest of the show.
Welcome back, everybody. I tried to give Dale the introduction. He failed miserably again.
Every time.
This is where you shine. Okay, these segues. Although our segue out we were talking about was pretty good on my part. So you're welcome for that, Patrick. You've taught me well, and because Patrick's had some good ones too.
And also some ones where you're like, how did that work and still not make sense?
But it's Patrick.
But it's Patrick.
And then it makes sense.
We miss you, Patrick. Hope you're getting sleep on this tour.
Have fun on that bus or the car or the you're in cars.
Or the RV or whatever.
They're in a caravan.
In a caravan. Nice. Could be worse.
Could be worse.
Could be way worse.
I would do a caravan of a tour. Let's go on tour.
On what?
Let's go on tour.
Tour.
Tour. Tour.
Pooler.
Pillar.
Read the question.
All right. Question number 4?
Something. Maybe five? 6. Like, 1, 2, 3,
we
4,
can't
5.
Count.
Wow.
We can't count.
5. There are 14 of these questions in here.
14?
But we'll definitely get through all of them.
Here's a good one. What are you doing to ensure you continue to grow?
Oh, I hate this question. I really
you wrote
hope.
It. You wrote
I know.
It.
I did write it.
What are you doing
it,
to ensure you continue to grow?
That it would not surface. What am I doing? This is what I'm doing. I believe I'm being more intentional with my music. I'm being more intentional with, I think, how it is produced now.
Okay.
I'm doing a lot more research for my songs and like trying to really combine commercial elements with my own original stuff that worked in the past. Like the length of my songs is much shorter now. I think the structure of my songs is more conducive to like what people actually want to hear instead of like what sounds good and what should be repeated. Like I used to think a chorus should go on forever. It shouldn't, 100%. I used to not repeat things in my choruses. Yeah. Like it wasn't like any sort of rhythm.
Yeah.
I feel like I've grown there. As far as just outside of that, I feel like I'm making as much time as I possibly can to for my music and like carving out time now that I previously couldn't before. And even if I could, it wasn't possible. But, you know, life be life in sometimes.
It does.
And it sort of puts a, you know, puts a cog in the machine, I guess you could say, or a crowbar in the bicycle spokes of what you're doing. And so you just kind of have to push through that and be intentional about, like, if music isn't your escape from all that, then is it something you actually, like, really love? And for me, it is. It's like I can sit down and escape through that. Like, mixing the song was a really fun process because it was like I could sit down and contextualize something and it would take my mind off of everything going on, you know, and just like layer something and build something from the ground up. So yeah, I think that's sort of my thing.
That's interesting. I'm gonna say for my answer, I'm gonna use the same phrase to be intentional, but I'm gonna take it a little different way, I think. For me, to ensure that I'm continuing growing, I am being more intentional with the writing process, in the sense of usually when I write and have written kind of up to this point, it's been very much like, okay, what do I feel? I'm just going to write this. You know, I'm just going to start strumming chords and whatever comes out, comes out.
Yeah.
It's going to be very like, it was very like open-ended, open gate.
Yeah.
You know, I have no idea what style song I'm going to write. I'm just going to write whatever I'm feeling.
Yeah.
Which is a great way to write. There's nothing wrong with that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a very, rut-inducing way to write. Because if you're not stretching your arms into different genres, into different feels intentionally, it's going to be really hard for you to break out of the same sound that you've been writing the entire time.
And it does take a lot of energy to break that consistently.
It does.
Like when you're trying something new, it takes a lot of energy.
It does.
And so it's very tempting to be like, this isn't working, I'm done.
I'm just going to go back to the way
I
did.
Go back to the way I
did. Or I'm just going to scrap what I made. And so like here recently, I've been very intentional, like, okay, I'm going to write something that's a totally different genre than what I'm used to. Let me do some lo-fi beats, right?
Yeah.
Let me do some of this because it's totally different. I'm going to listen to a bunch of, you know, hours of spoken word stuff to pull, you know, to be like part of a spoken part. That's a totally different process that you don't have in a lot of songs.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to find the right sample for a kick drum. Maybe I'm layering three or four because it's lo-fi and I want a specific thing out of it. I want it, you know, gritty. Or maybe turn around and I'm like, okay, I want to write a Halloween song. How am I going to do that? It's going to be, is it going to be a rock thing? Am I going to choose like kind of go the Eagles route and do like Witchy Woman kind of idea? Or am I going right. to, you know, do something more like the Monster Mash? Like, what am I doing here? You know, I'm trying to be more intentional about like, I'm going to write something that's out of my comfort zone. It's probably not going to be good the first couple times.
Yeah.
At least it hasn't been for me. I don't have that ability to just jump into a brand new genre that I've never written before and come out sounding good. It takes work. Like, okay, let me try this again. I like maybe this element of this, but it didn't fully write. It didn't fully work well. Maybe do this with this and this,
mm-hmm.
you know? And so, over time, I'm hoping that will develop into writing things totally different. Now, I've pretty much only written music on my own. I've not gotten the co-writing thing a whole lot. I've co-written one or two songs, but not a ton.
Yeah.
And so I know that's another way to kind of break out of that and to force yourself into a new genre. Like, I've always wanted to do the whole, like, writing with a band thing where you're like, hey, I've got this cool guitar idea, or hey, I got this lyric idea, and we're all, like, at a rehearsal. And then you just start making stuff, right? I've always had that, like, I want to do that someday. But I've never been in a band. So yeah. Everything I've done, like, I've pulled people together forming a band for concerts, like yeah. when you've performed with me. But we're not really, like, a cohesive unit.
Yeah.
It's like a little more of, like,
unit, yeah.
it's more of, like, the hired gun mindset. Like, hey, I'm doing this one gig, right? You know, or maybe these two gigs or whatever.
Right, and you already have songs that you've kind of...
Yeah, and the songs have already been chosen. Just giving them out and saying, hey, let's mm-hmm. rehearse these a handful of times before we go play.
Yeah.
You're not there to write.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. I'm trying to be more intentional in that regard.
Yeah. I'd say you've been succeeding there. I think a lot of your stuff that you show me that's, like, new and kind of, what do you call it, embraces that change is, like, just really cool. It's, mm-hmm. like, anyone that can step out on a limb like that and just embrace that, hat tip, 100%. Mad respect, bro.
Appreciate it.
So keep it up. Keep doing what you're doing.
Some of what I have, I don't like. That's for sure. Some of what I've shown you, I'm like, okay. You know, if you have any artist friends out there, if you're not an artist and you're listening to this, and you have any artist friends, ask them if they're willing to show you. If you got to be good friends, ask them if they're willing to show you some of their songs, some of their deep cuts that they've been working on, some concept ideas. Maybe it might only be 20 seconds of like a musical loop.
Right.
You're going to find some weird stuff. Some stuff that works, some stuff that does not.
Yeah.
You're going to find it. Because for every great song, like you mentioned earlier, you're going to have a bad song before it.
Yeah.
Right? You're going to write a ton of stuff. And so, but sometimes it's kind of funny to listen to, like,
yeah.
Did I really write that?
100%.
Right?
100%.
So.
Love it.
What's the next question?
I like this one. This one feels promising.
Mm.
All right. Mr. Dale. How do you know your song is finished?
Okay. How do you know your song is finished? Do you mean like when you're just first writing it or when you're trying to flesh it out with parts? Or both?
When it's done. When, like, the song is completed.
Like you have everything recorded and it's mixed and it's ready to go?
Ready to release.
Oh, man. That's tough. Oh, that's tough. I've heard this analogy. It's kind of like a painter.
Yeah.
You know, at some point you have to step back and say, okay, if I add any more, I'm taking away from the art.
Yeah.
If I add any more, it's going to be detrimental to this piece. At some point you have to put that last stroke in, that last fix on the random bird in the background and say, hey, this is good.
Right.
This is good. It is what it is. It's not going to get any better. Let me stop now. Let me step back and say, I've done enough.
Yeah.
And I think it's the same thing when it comes to like trying to do songs. You know, you have to be willing to find a place that you're like, I'm happy with what's here. I don't hate what's here. Hopefully you don't hate it. I'm happy with what's here. Sounds really good. Yes, I could keep doing new things. Yes, I could keep trying new things. But ultimately, you know, you're fighting for those last maybe a few inches that could go either way. You might end up making it better, but you also might end up making it worse. Now, this is extremely helpful if you are working with other people.
Yeah.
When you're working with other people on a song, that takes, in my opinion, out so many other variables of, is the song finished? Mm-hmm. If you wrote the song, take it to other people to help track and write the parts out. They're going to start feeling things, and you're going to start fleshing this thing out. And you're like, wow, this took a direction I did not expect. I no longer have the thought that this needs to be so much radically different, because somebody else put their opinion in it and they thought it was enough.
Yeah.
That gives you a little confidence to think, this is enough.
Yeah.
Plus, you have totally different part ideas that you can latch onto.
Yeah.
Mixing the same way. If you have the budget to send it to somebody else to mix, they'll mix it, they'll send it back to you. You might have one or two revisions. Mm-hmm. Assuming it's not just a horrible mix, you know, in that sense, your budget's going to tell you, this is enough. Right. The song's done, right? They've mixed it. They've done all their work. That mixer's done all that they're going to do to it, you know. And if they're good at their job, it'll be a pretty decent mix, you know, something that you can live with. And you're like, you know, this is good. Unless you have some harebrained, like, creative concept. But really, that should have been addressed earlier on anyway, not in the mix revisions.
Yeah.
Same way with mastering. You'll send it off. They'll send you something back. If you get other people in your process, they're going to help give you the confidence that the song is done.
Yeah.
It's kind of 100%. My mindset.
Yeah. More people that are involved, the more people that can be unbiased about your work, especially in the mixing and mastering phase. Yeah. Just like, that part was really jarring for me at first. It's like, I sent a mix in and I was like really happy with it. And then the master came back so different. And I was like, but this is gone. And it's like, well, no, this element needed to be there because it was blocking this. You know, I was like, yeah, you're right. You know, it's for the good of the song type mentality, but also understanding, here's my baby, take it.
Yeah.
Let's release it.
Yeah. It's hard.
It is. I think for me, it's like, there are really four main pillars. There's, you know, does it make musical and lyrical sense? That's something that obviously has to be there. Musically, that takes me sometimes a while to do. And that's usually done on the writing end and mixing end. The next thing I think would be, you know, balance. Is it balanced? Like, are the lows and the highs balanced together and working to help each other? Is anything being covered up or masked? Then I think, is the vocal really coming through? Is the vocal speaking in a way to me that is ready to release? Like, is the vocal confident? That's usually my term for it. Is like, is this a confident vocal?
Yeah.
And then, is it something that stands the test of time? Is my last one of like, am I going to look back at this and go, okay, I'm proud of this?
Yeah.
You know, and that's hard to assess in the moment because you can be proud of something you're doing, but having pride in something that's been done is different.
It is.
And it's better. And so there are some songs I've released where they're very dear to me, but I don't have a lot of pride in the way I released them and how I released and how I recorded them and all of that. And so, yeah, when all of those boxes are checked and my mom likes it and my girlfriend likes it and, you know, random person that I showed to likes it and me and Mello argue over it, you know, back and forth, that's how I know it's done.
Yeah.
Because me and Mello have this joke where it's like, we never are happy with our mixes, and so the other one is constantly telling the other one, being like, hey, it's done, it's good,
it's done,
and then it's like, no, it's not, it's still this. It's like, well, okay, you know, but yeah,
that's fair. Where are you from and how does that influence your music?
Oh boy. I am from a small town called Old Hickory, Tennessee. Population 50 people, most of which are senior citizens. I'm just kidding. There's much more in Old Hickory now. But when I was growing up, it was very like Piggly Wiggly, gas station, Sonic, my house. Mm-hmm. Like, it was church, you know, baseball. So it was a small town. I think I think that's influenced my writing. I talked about the naivety a while ago in one of the previous segments. I think growing up in a small town, it's very... it's beneficial
because everyone knows each other and it's like it's easy to connect with people and form a sense of community with your neighborhood. Mm-hmm. But it also, it's like if there's an opinion base of this neighborhood, everyone really shares it. You know, it's like it's a collective thought. It's a collective mindset. Mm. When you go to college or when you go outside of the neighborhood and you start encountering people who disagree with you in different perspectives, it's a shock and sort of a wake-up call to like there's other forms of like thinking, of ways of thinking about something. And that translates to your writing.
Absolutely.
In the way you think about writing, because you're like, okay, that's the conventional way, the way I've always thought of it. What if I think of it this way? And so I think for me, my hometown, it really fostered that naivety and also gave me the drive to explore like what else is out there and what else is different.
Okay.
So that's me. What about you, Mr. Oklahoma?
Yeah, I'm from Slaughterville and Lexington, Ada kind of areas. Yeah,
it's called Slaughterville?
It's called Slaughterville, the town.
Yeah. I had no idea. You this was that? A thing. No.
I've told you that.
You're from Slaughterville?
I'm from Slaughterville, Oklahoma. Wow. I was born down in Ada.
If Texas Chainsaw Massacre was like in Texas, or if it was in Oklahoma, then it would be at Slaughterville.
Look, all agreed? I'm saying, yes or yes. As long as you're not there on a Friday night for the purge, you're fine. Just go inside. It's family fun night. Just stay out the way.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. The idea of your hometown being the purge is hilarious.
Right. No, I'm from Slaughterville, Oklahoma. You talk about 50 people. That's pretty close to accurate. Yeah. I used to say we were a bend in the curve.
Yeah.
Cause it is, there's the Slaughterville curve.
Yeah.
And, growing up, there was a auto shop and a tire shop. Mm-hmm. Those were only there cause there happened to be a racetrack not that far away. Mm. Otherwise we wouldn't have those. It was really big news when we got a Dollar General. That was big. Nice. Even bigger when we got the Red Box.
Huge.
There's a gas station or two.
The fact that he called it the Red Box is hilarious. It tells you something. That's like when an older person says my Facebook instead of just Facebook. I saw it on my Facebook.
Yeah.
It's Facebook. You know what I mean? But anyways.
Yeah. I grew up there between Slaughterville and then spent a lot of time in Ada, Oklahoma. That's where a lot of my friends were from. And then of course moved out here to Tennessee, and one of the biggest things that it took me a couple years to realize that was an influence on my stuff, on my music, was that there is a Western flair musically to a lot of my stuff, especially my older stuff. I didn't hear it at all. I just thought it was normal music. I'm like, this is my music. This is what it sounds like. And then I was actually in studio recording demos of my music for a professor that I had at the time. He was testing out some equipment. He's like, do you want to come do some demos? I'm like, sure. Yeah. Outside of class kind of stuff. I'm like, absolutely. I'll be there in studio anytime outside of class. I can be there. And we get through three or four songs and he's like, you really lean into that Western kind of feel, don't you? I'm like,
what?
Do you?
Yeah.
What are you talking about?
It's like a shock, yeah.
And so I went back, I started paying attention to my songs, mm-hmm. and I was like, oh, you're right. Oh, I do. I did not realize this.
100%.
And I think some of my... And to be clear, Western and country are two different things.
Yep.
People call... And I was actually having this conversation earlier today. People call Oklahoma... Technically, it's part of the Midwest. I think there's a horrible categorization for Oklahoma because you have
it's more
like
west,
Ohio,
right?
And you have Illinois, and you have like Iowa.
Yeah,
and I think even Michigan.
Yeah,
right. That's the Midwest.
Yeah, Colorado.
Colorado's mountain.
It's mountain.
Yeah. I think they call that. I don't think they call that part of the Midwest. Hmm. But you have like these kind of northern central states that are, and that's a whole different culture. And so when people talk about Midwesterners, that's what they talk about.
Yeah.
I used to think growing up in Oklahoma, I thought we were part of the South. Not really.
Yeah.
Oklahoma's not like the South. It's definitely not the Deep South.
No.
That's for sure.
No.
But I categorize this as part of the South. It's like Oklahoma and Texas are very similar culturally. With the tribes aside, that's a huge influence on Oklahoma culture.
and a huge influence, I think, on a lot of my stuff too. But all that being said, like, I now consider Oklahoma Old West.
Okay.
We're not Midwest. We're certainly not current, like, West. We're not West Coast.
Yeah.
Not West Coast.
No.
We're not really, we're not the mountain people.
Nah.
We're like Old West.
Old West.
Like, there's real cowboys.
Real cowboys. Like,
that was, we would come to Nashville and I saw all these people walking around with cowboy hats. I'm like, oh, yeah, cool. We got some cowboys.
You think you're cowboys. Like, yeah.
Wait a second. I'd stop and watch them for like 20 seconds. I'm like,
these cowgirls are wooing. What's going on?
You're it's not
like,
wrong.
Like, what's going on?
You're
yeah.
not wrong. You know?
And they're sitting there glittering. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm like, this isn't right. Yeah. All these cowboy hats are fake and these boots are like $20 fall apart after two nights, right? Buy one, get three free pair of boots.
Yeah.
You know, kind of billboards. I'm like, this isn't Western. This isn't country. At least not the country I grew up with. You know, this is, you know, a totally different thing. You know, I went back home this past weekend to Oklahoma and spent some time there. And I was like, man, it's refreshing to be around a bunch of other old trucks again.
Yeah.
Because, like, I drove my old 93 Ford pickup truck, which to me, growing up, I mean, it was older, but it wasn't old.
Wasn't that, yeah.
You could go to junkyards and find them all day.
Yep.
You know, find parts. Everybody else is driving them. Come out here and, like, I've called four or five junkyards to get spare parts. And they're like, yeah, we don't carry anything that old. It took me back.
Yep.
It's stuff like that. And, like, and I drove back to Oklahoma. I'm like, man, yep, there's one.
Yeah.
It's a different, it's a slower pace of life.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think breeds into my music in the sense of, like, where I come from, in the sense of peace and contentment and contemplation and nostalgia. Maybe not the nostalgia aspect, but definitely the slower vibe, right. I think, comes from that because I'm used to a slower pace of life there than here.
For sure.
So I don't know. Right. That's a giant answer to say my stuff has a Western fling.
Has a Western fling.
So.
Well, we will continue the Western we say Western.
Western fling is what I said.
Western fling. We won't continue that.
Western swing, maybe.
The swing. There you go.
Yeah,
we will swing right back with the last segment. See, Patrick, we need you. Sorry.
Hey guys, what's up? It's DJ Patty G. I hope you guys have been enjoying the show so far. If you want to go find more, go to our website, su-podcast.com. We have lots of cool playlists there, whether it be from artists that we've had on the show or with other independent artists from all over the world. Also, make sure to follow us at successfully_unsigned on all of our platforms, as well as Unsigned Podcast on TikTok. You guys will be our best friend if you go rate us 5 stars on all platforms. And if you like and subscribe this video, make sure to keep watching so you can see more of our shenanigans and other tomfoolery. Thanks, guys.
We are back for our final segment. Thanks for hanging with us tonight. We are digging into the cup of questions about songwriting from mine and Dale's experience. We are happy that you've been with us and definitely share your own thoughts below. We would love to hear your answers to some of these questions. And I wouldn't be opposed to asking some of these questions to the artists we have on in the future.
Yeah.
So without further ado, is it my turn or your turn?
It's your turn.
My turn. All right. Mm-mm-mm. All right. What motivates you to continue to write songs?
Ooh, what motivates me to continue to write songs?
You're not supposed to have a long pause before that.
I'm collecting my thoughts.
Nothing, really.
Nothing.
I don't, you know.
No, what motivates me to continue to write songs is that for me, well, you mentioned earlier, music is often an escape.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, it is still an escape of a sort. It's not the type from when, like, I first started writing music, mm-hmm. right? It's evolved, it's shifted, it's changed. But it's still an escape to an extent. And the best way I know how to describe it is actually kind of summarizing the words that the lead singer of Imagine Dragons used years ago when, like, they were still doing stuff like Demons and, like, Radioactive and, like, mm-hmm. those were, like, their big songs before they went, like, the full-on, like, pop kind of route.
Yeah.
I was watching a live performance video. It was an all-acoustic set. In just this little, like, listening room style environment. And right before he sang the song, he was like, you know, I wrote this song. It's a personal song. But he's like, you know, the cool thing about music is you write a song and suddenly, he's like,
you can write a song with all of your emotions, all of your thoughts, all of your deepest, darkest demons, right? And as soon as you play it, all of a sudden, everybody relates it to themselves, not to you.
Yeah.
They're like, it's a way to express everything you feel. It's a diary that you're making public, that the name at the top of the diary suddenly no longer matters.
That's crazy. Yeah.
And like he described it in different words, but that's kind of my retelling of his point.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized, wow, you know, that's really deep and meaningful to me, because like so many, you know, so many guys, I have a hard time expressing sometimes the way that I feel just in like a conversation. I don't want to come up and tell you like everything that's going on with my life that's wrong and horrible. You know, I don't want to get into like all the things that I feel, especially not publicly, much less with, well, not much less, but you know,
Dale's a very guarded gentleman.
I've never considered myself such, but in some ways I am, right? Yeah. There's things, yeah. Everybody has things that they don't want to talk
about.
Of
course, of course.
But I struggle to open up and talk about things that I'm actually currently going through.
Yeah.
I can talk about things that I've done in the past, but things that I'm currently going through and I struggle with.
Why do you think that is, real quick?
Okay, therapy session, right?
Okay, well.
That was just never something that was really practiced growing up. That was never something I was a part of.
Right.
Not that it was ever like against the rules. It was just something that didn't happen.
Yeah.
And I don't know. That was just a skill I never learned.
Yeah.
And so now later in life, I have a harder time doing that. But what I found was when I was, you know, a young teenager starting to write, I found out that, hey, I saw that video and I was like, hey, I can write everything that I feel. And if I can't sit down with a person and talk about this with a person, maybe I can write. And sure, there's going to be a few people that are close to you that are going to know your life and they're going to know what's going on, mm-hmm. and know, this is coming from this.
Yeah.
There are going to be people that see that and recognize that.
Yeah, that see that, of course.
But the vast majority of people that hear that are never going to know that.
Don't know. Absolutely.
And even some people that are close with you might not realize the extent of everything. They're not going to know the nuances of every single line of every song and how huge this tiny throwaway line is.
Mm-hmm.
Because you and I know that.
Yeah.
We, you know, any writer knows that.
Yeah.
That tiny line can change everything about the song and add so much depth to the song. But to everybody else, it sounds like a throwaway.
It's power and mystery, for sure.
It's power and mystery. But at the same time, you're still relieving yourself of those thoughts and of those feelings. You're able to push them into a piece of artwork.
Yeah.
And you're able to tell everybody whether they understand it or not.
Absolutely.
You are still doing your part of telling it.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, that's a motivation, because I'm like, hey, this is a way I can still express the way that I feel in a way that's not awkward for me.
Right.
Right?
Right.
That's the whole gist of it for me.
Hmm. Okay. I like that. I like that kind of image of the diary having a different name. Just like,
That's awesome. That's a part I added. He didn't say that.
Oh,
I'll claim that part. I'll claim that part. Artist mentality.
Dale has depth. Dale's got some depth.
Got range.
Got range, boy. Yeah.
Maybe we should write a song about that.
There it is.
There's
as easy as that.
Conversations are great ways to get ideas, by the way.
Let's write a song called Dale's Depth. Actually, maybe not.
Don't do that.
But I think to answer the question quickly from my end, I would say what motivates me is, yes, it's an escape, but it also is sort of, it's just something, it's an outlet for me. Like, and I guess that would be an escape, but the outlet part is just when I write, the process of writing emulates success for me, like just building it piece by piece. It to me, it's like building a piece of furniture or something. It's like it starts in pieces that you either buy or get or whatever, and then you assemble this thing and it doesn't look like what it's supposed to look like at first. Have you ever been building something and it's like, this, how is this supposed to be a shelf? It looks like not a shelf.
Yeah.
And then suddenly you're like, oh, this part and this part and this part. And then it gets built and you're like, wow, I built this thing not really knowing what I was doing as I was doing it. And again, it's that pride element. It's like, I love that feeling of taking pride in something that I've done and finished and completed and like put my heart and soul and hours into, you know, same as painting, same as writing a book, any of that. That's like a rewarding, like dopamine feeling. Mm. So that's what I would say.
I think that's fair.
Yeah.
I think that's totally fair. And like you said, it kind of emulates life in the sense of like, I know when we were young, we think adults have everything figured out. Then the older you get, you realize, well, I used to
they think, don't, neither do we.
Yeah, exactly. Nobody has it figured out. Everybody's trying to figure this thing out.
Yeah.
And at some point, I guess you get comfortable with it.
Yeah.
The fact that you don't know and you won't know and yep. you have no idea, I guess you just have to get comfortable with that.
Yep.
But that is, you know, a song is a microcosm analogy to that greater picture of life.
100%. 100%.
So.
All right.
Time for one more?
Maybe two.
Maybe two?
Is it me or you? I think it's you.
Is it me?
Okay. More for you.
All right. Mr. David, how do you measure success in your field?
And this, I wrote this question, it's meant for your audio career as well.
Well, okay.
I thought I would okay. give you the question, but...
too bad.
How do I measure success? Again, the four pillars, I would say, you know, just all of that.
List them again.
List them again. It's going to be vocal confidence. It's going to be, does it make musical and lyrical sense? It's going to be, is it a good blend of commercial and original blending? And then the last one is, does my mom like it? Does my girlfriend like it? Do my friends and family dig it? So I would say that's where it starts for measuring success. Mm. And again, that piece that stands the test of time. Mm. Also, getting better is how you measure success.
Yeah.
Listening to old songs I've had versus songs that I'm doing now, it's so different, but it's so much better. And it's like, yeah, I've succeeded in getting better, which in and of itself is amazing. So I think failure is also a good measurement of success in a weird way, because when you fail, it gives you an opportunity to grow. Mm-hmm. And without failing, you don't have that. Mm-hmm. And so it's success is bred from that.
Absolutely.
So yeah, that's where we measure it.
It's where you measure it, huh?
Yeah.
I think for my answer, I'm going to pull the idea that I heard and then have kind of adopted. And of course, you change it. But I heard it from someone else, a producer that I have worked with quite a bit this last year. The idea that whether you're an audio engineer and kind of producer, kind of like myself, or an artist or a musician or a songwriter or a whatever, you know, especially in music, because it's such a hard thing to pinpoint what success is for some people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for me, the two biggest things are you making music and art that you love? Are you enjoying the process?
Mm-hmm.
Do you love the outcome of whatever it is?
Yeah.
You know, I'm not saying that you love every song, but do you love doing it?
Yep.
Are you enjoying doing it? And two, you know, as like on the production side, like I am, are you making a living doing it? It's easier to make a living on a production than it is as an artist.
Yeah.
Because as an artist, you're pretty much entirely reliant on your audience.
Yep.
It's hard to convince that many people, you know, especially starting out, to support your living.
Yep.
On the production side, you have a little bit more of an easier end to it. It's still difficult, but it's a little more of an easy end, right? Are you making a living doing it?
Yeah.
Can you support your life financially doing that?
Mm-hmm.
If you love it and you can do it, you found success. Now, the idea that I pulled from another producer was the idea of don't measure your success on accolades.
Yeah.
Don't measure your success on if you have those, you know, beautiful colored vinyls on the wall.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you got all the stamps and the trophies and the, you know, the everything that comes with that. Don't measure it that way, because that is relying on other people to tell you your art is good.
Yeah.
You need to rely on yourself and have the belief and confidence in yourself that you love what you do and that your art is good.
Yeah.
Right? Because all that other stuff, having a hit, having something go to number one, having winning trophies and Grammys and Platinums and whatever else you want to throw into that category, is relying on other people to tell you that what you're doing is worth it. And while those things are great, don't get me wrong, mm-hmm. I think everybody would love to have one of those or more than one of those someday. Everybody would love that. That is relying on somebody else to tell you that what you're doing is good and not believing in yourself enough to say, me doing this is worth it.
Mm-hmm.
And so success, because of that whole conversation, success to me now means the two things I mentioned. Am I loving what I'm doing? Do I love what I have? Would I get up every day, even if I didn't make anything, to do this?
Yeah.
Am I still doing it?
Yeah.
Am I making enough to support my life financially doing this?
Yeah.
You know, if I can have those two things, then I'm as successful as I can ever ask to be.
Yeah.
If anything more than that happens, then that's wonderful.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
It's a blessing.
It'd be,
for sure.
It'd be a blessing. It'd be amazing.
Yeah.
But I can't expect other people to come in, swoop in, and save the day and tell me that I'm successful for me to suddenly believe that I'm successful.
Right.
And for me to suddenly believe that what I'm doing is valid.
Right.
Right.
You need to do that yourself.
You have to find that within.
Of course. And you know what else? Having success, measuring success, can even be done when you're unsigned.
It can.
Yeah.
You don't have to be signed.
You don't have to be signed.
You don't have to be signed.
I wish there was like a podcast that was like named after that. Like yeah. Being successfully unsigned. Oh.
It's a great idea.
Whoa.
Don't steal
that. That's crazy.
Don't steal that idea. That's ours.
What a way to wrap things up here. That was a good outro, but it's not finished yet. Just pretend I didn't say that. We are successfully unsigned, and we hope you've enjoyed our little chill episode tonight outside in what is now getting a little chilly.
Mm.
But we love fall. It's crew neck weather, like as I said before. You got goosebumps. I noticed that.
I was like every now and then my hands start like.
He's like, yeah, being successful means you don't die on my porch from freezing. But all the things, subscribe to the channel, like, comment on the video, share with your friends, answer some of these questions down below that we've asked. Mm-hmm. How do you measure success in your own field, for sure?
And help us start the conversation. We want you to involved in this conversation just like we are. Mm-hmm. So like David said, share this with your friends. Share it with one person who you think would have something insightful to say about their career, about your career, about, you know, the music industry as a whole. Because each one of these conversations is not only going to help, it's not only going to help us, obviously, but it'll also help you have a better understanding of where you're at with your own career and where you want to get to. And it'll help them to understand you. It'll help you to understand them. It'll help them. It helps everybody when these conversations are had, which is kind of the point of this whole thing. We want to help people have a better understanding of the things that we wish we had known when we'd started out.
And have these conversations with your peers, like do with your fellow artists, like ask these questions with your fellow artists. Like it's healthy to ask someone you care about.
Yes.
Hey man, like where are you with your music? Like
that
is so healthy and so important.
So encouraging.
So encouraging.
When somebody asks you about your art.
Holding you accountable and just also challenging you, that's something amazing.
Like this last weekend, went to Oklahoma, traveled for to go to an annual Chickasaw meeting and art show and all that. Bunch of friends and family there. And I'm standing there at one of my friend's booths, and she's got a bunch of really cool artwork that, you know, 2D artwork that she's made. And I was standing there talking with her, and some guy came up and was like, hey, what's your name? I'm like, Dale, what's your last name? Shackelford. And he's like, I follow you on Instagram. I've listened to your music.
Wow.
I was like,
isn't that crazy?
Thanks. Wow. I didn't expect this. This is awesome. You know?
That's a dope. Yeah.
And he told me his name, and I knew his name. I'd followed him back for some time, although his Instagram didn't, I don't think, had any like photos of his face or anything like that. So I didn't like get to recognize him from photos.
Right.
But I'm like, this is really cool.
That's dope. Yeah.
Stuff like that. Whether it's, you know, somebody you don't like know personally yet and maybe have a chance to get to meet, kind of like that.
Mm-hmm.
Or whether it's friends you know, ask them about their art. They're going to love it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be encouraging to them to do more.
Yeah.
It's going to be encouraging to you to be a part of their process.
Yeah.
You know?
100%. Love it.
Well, and guys, tell us to do more podcasts.
100%.
That's the moral of the story, right?
We have such wonderful things coming for you all, as usual. And a new season is on the cusp here. So we are going to call it a night. Thank you so much for hanging out with us. Definitely, again, subscribe, follow the channel and the Instagram page. su-podcast.com is the website. Again, su-podcast.com is the website. Follow him, Dale Shack Official. Follow me, David Overstreet Official. And follow the Instagram once again. Good night, and we will see you guys on the next one.